If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Holla Chat. I'm Bobby.
And I'm Rachel. Today we are going to talk about the concerts, our concert post-mortem.
I have been for many, many years a big fan of the YouTuber Jenny Nicholson. I've been watching her since her Suicide Squad sales pitch video, I believe, went viral way back in the day before virality was even a thing we understood. And so I've been following along with her for a long time. And I believe that I had told you that I really enjoyed her video style. And I liked particularly the way that when she makes a video, she always puts her thoughts into an internet-friendly numbered list. And yes. So we are following, we're doing the Jenny Nicholson style of content today. We have a numbered list.
It's going to be organized. It's going to be different. We're going to be on it. We're going to know what we're talking about.
No rambling whatsoever.
Before we even get started, today is the 11th, August 11th. So we are recording before ATEEZ's final North American show.
Right.
Their final one will happen tonight.
Yes.
In Atlanta. Mm. Not Atlanta.
No, not Atlanta.
Strike that. Sorry. Atlanta weighs so heavy on me, which we'll talk about later.
Wait, me too. And I feel like I bear some responsibility when actually it is Peso Pluma. But we'll get to it.
Anyways, they will be performing their last show in Rosemont, Illinois, tonight. So if something incredible happens at this final show and we do not talk about it, that's why.
Yeah, we didn't know about it.
Tiny disclaimer.
All right. Tour postmortem number one belongs to me. This one is the Wonderland Apology. I come to you all with a heavy heart today. I don't know how one does like a YouTuber apology. I don't typically have to do these.
Well, I think you're supposed to be wearing a lot of makeup and have like a really soft lighting, but since it's going to be just audio, I think the soft voice is right.
Okay. The lighting is soft though. I've got some natural diffused light. Please picture me looking very sorrowful and contrite.
Maybe we can find some music right here.
Maybe we can, or maybe whoever is editing this doesn't care anymore.
Correct.
So I made a statement in one of our very first episodes before the tour began. We had an episode where we talked about our plans for the tour, our expectations. We talked about making our bingo boards. And I made a statement that I believe was very wrong and very misguided. And that was that in order for me to be able to witness Hallazia, which by the way, if you don't know, somehow we did get to witness Hallazia. We spoke that into existence, so you're welcome, everyone. But I said, in order for me to witness Hallazia, I believed that they needed to remove Wonderland from the show. I have been to four shows now, and I would like to apologize for saying something that was the most wrong I've ever been. I've never had a worse idea in my entire life. If you've been to the shows, you know that one, Wonderland is iconic. It is irreplaceable. It is so great. Mm-hmm. But in particular, I should have never attempted to speak into existence anything that would deprive us of Sang-hwa getting to have his moment. Mm-hmm. And so for that, I deeply and sincerely apologize. I will reflect. on my words and actions, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I will be better in the future.
We will be so careful about the things that we speak into
existence. We have to be so careful about what we say. We don't even have to say, if we edit it out, it doesn't count because we've spoken some things into existence that we never intended.
Correct.
Which we'll get to.
I'll say that we have an incredible record. If we say mm-hmm. we want something while we're recording, that something seems to happen.
I will say, though, one thing I have specifically requested that I have not received is Jungo wearing the tour beanie. We got the tour mm-hmm. beanie, which I did ask mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. but we did not get Jungo wearing it in the encore, not even in Canada, which was our best candidate for beanie wearing.
Well, maybe tonight.
Maybe
he's staring at that beanie right now.
I'm thinking, wow, I haven't worn that. There's someone in Texas that really wants me to wear this.
My fans know how good I look in a mm-hmm. beanie. Mm-hmm. He'll really top it off if he wears some denim with it.
Speaking of making apologies and being wrong about things, mm-hmm. next up we have Twitter discourse. This is number two. There's been a lot of weird things that have been happening on Twitter over this tour. I would like to mm-hmm. start in the vein of people being wrong about things. All the people who mm-hmm. wanted to take Wave and yes. Dancing Like Butterfly Wings off of the set list.
Yes.
Just wrongness. Yes. What are you talking about? What are you, me? Don't be me.
Dancing Like Butterfly Wings is such a simple song. We kind of like talked about this in our live episode after seeing Jungo get to do Mingi's rap in it, right? Mm. It's not a song that I reach for often. It's not a song that's like making all of my playlists, but when they perform it live, it breaks up the show a little bit. It mm-hmm. allows them to, I think even Hongjoong says it right before they do it, like, I just want to have a little fun with the audience.
Yeah.
And it gives them the chance to do that. A lot of ATEEZ's songs are so cinematic, mm-hmm. so heavy choreo. Even the ones that aren't heavy choreo, they're very atmospheric, cinematic. Mm-hmm. They don't actually have a lot of songs that are just kind of like chill vibes. Let's all hang out and have like a really good time. Mm-hmm. And Dancing Like Butterfly Wings is one of them. Another one I think might be like All About You.
Which they'll never give me.
They'll never give us. But taking Dancing Like Butterfly Wings off does take off this like huge chunk of the show that they devote almost entirely to these fan interactions that mm-hmm. people are obsessed with.
Right.
So if you take Dancing Like Butterfly Wings off, all these interaction girlies are going to have nothing to post about on Twitter. So I don't know why they're wanting it gone.
Well, I mean, truthfully, maybe they're not the ones who do want it gone. I feel like a lot of people who have been arguing about the set list, or who were, I don't think anybody still is. I feel like a lot of people that were arguing about the set list weren't even people who were going.
Right.
Which I feel like is often a way. Like a lot of the criticisms about send off and about the ultimate VIP mm-hmm. were from people mm-hmm. who weren't there. So it's like, mm-hmm. what are you talking about?
That's the thing about Twitter discourse. And we joke about it in some other episodes, but you don't have to do anything to have a Twitter account mm-hmm. other than like have an email address. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be an ATEENEE to be on ATEENEE Twitter.
We've seen people who were not ATEENEEs. Turns out, oh, wow, this person that had this whole ATEEZ fan account didn't even like ATEEZ. Wow, that's so crazy.
You just don't have to be anything or have anything to be on Twitter. So listening to all of these Twitter opinions as if they are knowledgeable, good, thoughtful analysis is just a waste of your time. So all of these set list takes, maybe some people have a good take, but it's near impossible to rake through the trash to find like the good stuff. Right. So I don't know, any of the Twitter discourse about set list, it's like, meh, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I hope they never take Wave off the set list either, because like Wonderland, that's such an iconic song. It's what they won their first win for mm-hmm. in Korea, so it has a lot of special meaning. They have a ton of fun singing it. Like, that's so clear that they're having a nice time on stage. The audience loves it. Like, if you don't love it, you're a hater. I don't know.
Speaking of haters, I'm really nailing it with the transitions today. One of the first arguments on Twitter once the tour had happened or had started happened over in Tacoma. There was a whole situation where, okay, so let's back up. Every single venue says don't camp, right?
Right.
Every single venue. Every single venue says they're not going to honor fan-made lines. All of them.
Right.
Because they don't want people out there in unsafe conditions.
Especially before the concert.
Especially before the concert. They do not want people camping out days ahead of time. They don't want any sort of liability. And they do have to say this for liability purposes. Because if they don't specifically state that you cannot camp, then that's basically them giving you permission. And then if something happens, then they might be liable. And they don't want to deal with that, right?
Right.
So in Tacoma, I'm actually very confused about what exactly went down. But there was a lot of beef in Tacoma where some people who apparently had not been camping showed up and were able to get far up in the line, and a lot of H&Es, because Tacoma said, we are not honoring fan-made lines. You just be here when you get here, and, you know, be here on time for whenever we start doing the thing, and that's what counts. Well, what it seems like is that Tacoma, like they said, did not honor the fan-made lines, and that people who did not camp were able to get ahead of people who did camp. That's what I believe is the situation.
I think so too.
You know, when we get to Duluth, which Duluth is its own section, we're going to have some thoughts, feelings, and opinions about that. But what I thought was particularly disappointing about all this was not necessarily the line cutters, but it was everybody's reaction to the line cutters, because one, somebody posted videos of these women who had supposedly cut the line without their permission, fully filmed them, faces and all, and put them on the internet to shame them. And because these women were older, like they looked to be, you know, late 30s, early 40s, possibly. I'm very bad at ages, but like somewhere in their 30s or 40s. So not, you know.
Around our age.
Yeah, around our age. They weren't wearing the whole like concert fit getup. They were just wearing like, you know, fan merch. The way a lot of people do, which is what we wore mostly, was just merch. And everybody's response was, oh, they're old and they're ugly and their outfits are ugly. And how dare they, you know, why are they acting like this at their big age? And it's like, I get being like, you know, you should be more mature than this. But the way that the fandom targeted them, not specifically for their actions, but for their looks and for what they were wearing and the way they wanted to shame them for that was so disappointing. Not unexpected.
No, that's the standard K-pop rhetoric, right? If someone doesn't do something that you like, and you can go low and you can say, oh, you're ugly, oh, you're old, you're whatever, like that's what they're gonna do, even when those things aren't like true. Because like, what does old and ugly even mean, right? Like, those are subjective things. But I think what I thought was stupid, and what I still think is stupid, is that both sides of this were playing out the drama online. Like, the girls who were recorded were then, like, recording those other people and telling their side online. And, like, you two are standing next to each other.
I know. Like, y'all are literally in the same space. What are you doing?
5 feet from each other with your phones out, just tweeting away. And it's like, I don't know. Y'all need to, like, learn to talk to people in person if you have a problem with it. According to the girls who cut or whatever, the security guards told them, we're not honoring that line.
Oh, wow. That sounds so familiar.
So we'll get into that more later. But there was another instance of someone being shamed on Twitter by someone posting a picture of them. This one was in Phoenix. And it was a group of people who were standing in line, and they were drinking Starbucks. And, you know, the fandom has and is boycotting Starbucks, has long held a stance on that. And so that's whatever. I'm not going to touch that. But what happened was that some Twitter user with like a big following, and they are a mean account consistently, so the fact that they have a big following tells me everything that I need to know about AT&E Twitter and like the discourse there. Like, if you are a mean account that is mean to other people and you have a huge following, that says a lot about what's going on in this space. But they took a picture of these people drinking Starbucks, posted it online, like their full body shots. A lot of people were upset with like how the girl in the picture was dressed because the angle of the picture really like showed her, you know, whole butt cheek. Mm. But that's not even the point. She could have been in sweats. The mm-hmm. point is that you took a picture of someone without their permission and you posted it online to shame them for an action you do not agree with, which is crazy behavior. Yeah. I just think that running to the internet to make fun of someone is the number one problem in our country. Mm-hmm. Unrelated to K-pop, but just everything. Everything that's wrong with our country is that people run to social media to make fun of people for doing normal things, for doing things they have to do, for whatever reason. They just want to be able to make fun of someone and be mean, and they want to have a platform to do it. And anyways, this girl who posted the Starbucks thing, she did get called out. I blocked her immediately. Mm-hmm. She got called out. She deleted her Twitter, but she's back,
yeah.
right? Because the worst thing you can be on Twitter is an Eden stan, not a mean person, mm-hmm. not a scammer. Like, all of those people, mean people, scammers, they can come back.
Yeah.
And they are accepted with open arms. Saucings, like stalkers, mm-hmm. like all of those people, you're welcome to come back. But, you know, be an Eden stan and you should be yeah. gone forever. Exactly. Mm. I'm upset that this person has such a large following and they consistently are, like, mean to people. Mm. I just don't think that's right. And I'm not going to say their account because... But when people post another picture of someone online and they don't talk to them and they mm-hmm. don't interact with them and they're just, like, posting their picture, you don't know what's... Like, you don't know that person's story. You could be getting that person in trouble mm-hmm. with their work. You could... I will say, in Phoenix, we were there. It was... What was that? 110 degrees. Mm-hmm. It was so hot. The closest place to get a drink was Starbucks. And, like, I also don't drink Starbucks as, like, a general rule. Mm-hmm. But if there's an emergency, like, if I have to run quickly to get something, if I'm going to pass out, mm-hmm. I don't know. You just don't know. Like, what if one of those people had some medical thing and they needed something to drink quickly and this right. was the closest, easiest place for them to get something in this heat? Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't know people's story, and to post someone online and shame them for a behavior that you don't agree with, I will never agree with that type of behavior.
Well, it also tells me they didn't really care about the problem to begin with, because if you right. wanted to fix the problem, if you wanted this person to change their behavior, they were right there. You right. were within walking distance of this person. So you could mm-hmm. have walked up and said, hey, I don't know if you know this, but, and then gone into your spiel about why this person shouldn't be drinking Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And then you could have, you know, had a conversation with them and maybe found out, oh, you were about to faint, and, or maybe somebody gave you a gift card and you didn't know what else to do with it or whatever. But the fact that instead of trying to make any sort of real positive change, you ran to mm-hmm. the internet to shame them on the internet so that you could get internet clout tells me you didn't care about it to begin with. You mm-hmm. just wanted the clout on the internet. You wanted to get people to interact with you in your safe space where nobody can really touch you because it's all fake. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if you're publicly shaming somebody for their in real life behavior on the internet mm-hmm. instead of talking directly to them.
Especially when you're in the space with them.
Like, you're right there. It would have taken you 30 seconds to walk over there and say something to them. Not that I'm like, you need to go confront people all the time that they're doing something you don't think is right, but like, what exactly were you hoping to accomplish by posting that? Like, what good mm-hmm. change was going to happen in the world because you decided to post that person's picture?
This is a problem with all of the Twitter discourse for 18E, mm-hmm. I feel like, is that so many 18E are trying to lay claim to the moral high ground. I am morally superior to you because of this thing that I am doing. Mm-hmm. And we saw it when I don't even remember the scandal, but it was like a Mingi scandal with an anime.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know which one you're talking about. I don't remember what it's called.
But so many people came on like, I will never forgive Mingi. This is horrible behavior. I can't believe Mingy would do this before any information about what was happening was out. Like, mm-hmm. no one knew anything about this anime. They had heard things, and so they ran to the internet to say that Mingy is a garbage human. Mm. And then they had to all retract that, because it turned out that wasn't the case. And it's like, you didn't have to run to the internet mm-hmm. to claim your moral high ground mm-hmm. immediately without having all of the facts.
Well, as it turned out, the video where he supposedly had recommended, it was something about the abyss, like Heart of the Abyss or
yeah.
something of the abyss. He, in the video where he had supposedly recommended it to an Aitani, the video had been edited. And then it turned out that he hadn't recommended it, that an Aitani had just asked him, you know, what have you been watching? And then mm-hmm. it turned out that he had been watching what was probably an edited, censored version of the anime.
It was.
And that he hadn't recommended it. He had said, but that one's really tough to watch, or something along those lines of like, I'm, you know, it's really difficult to watch. And that it wasn't his favorite. It was just something mm-hmm. he had seen. And mm-hmm. I know, like, the night of, I had gone, I was like, I don't know anything about this anime. I've never heard of it. So I had gone and done some research about the anime itself. There are a lot of people that have like some real beef with it and a lot of legitimate concerns. But I want someone who's actually seen it and knows what they're talking about. So I went on YouTube and found somebody that does like anime reviews. And I found this girl who watched it, and she had very thoughtful, it's like, she liked it. She's like, I really do like it, but I can mm-hmm. see all of the problems with it. And mm-hmm. what people did was they pulled out these problems and they only focused on that and acted like that was the entire content of the anime, instead of realizing yeah. it had a whole, there's all this other stuff in it too. So they did that. But I had told you that night, I jumped the gun. I didn't go online and like blast Mingy or anything. When the original story was that he had recommended the anime, I said he shouldn't have recommended it. He wasn't wrong for watching it, but he probably shouldn't have recommended it to someone that he didn't know. And then turns out I was wrong, because he didn't even recommend it. He just said, I've seen it. You know, that was it. And I feel like a lot of people never circle back around to that and were like, oh, actually, I was wrong. I don't remember seeing a lot of people admit that they had been wrong about him.
Well, even when they were admitting it, they were still claiming that moral high ground, like morals over K-pop. Of course I was going to come out and condemn it because mm-hmm. it was such bad behavior. But now that we know the full story, I don't think what he did was bad. And it's like, well, why were you condemning someone mm-hmm. when you didn't know the full story? Right. Why were you running online to condemn a person mm-hmm. and say you're a monster? Because that's what they were calling him. Yeah. It wasn't like, I don't agree with this thing. They were calling him like horrible names. And I think I talked about it maybe with you, maybe with Cassandra at the time when all of this was happening. Like, would a Western artist that these same fans like be held to the same standard? Mm. Because Game of Thrones is full of problematic content. Mm-hmm. That's not the whole content. My husband likes Game of Thrones, and I don't think he's a monster. But mm-hmm. I don't watch Game of Thrones because of that problematic content. I don't like it. I don't like to watch content like that, and I don't think that it's handled well in Game of Thrones mm-hmm. because I think that the showrunners are idiots, and that's my official opinion. Mm. So I don't think that Game of Thrones has, like, I think it's full of problematic content, but so many people watch it and like it because of other things. Right. It's not like they're watching it for the rape or for the incest. Mm-hmm. They're watching it for other reasons. Mingy was not given any grace to like this anime for any of the other reasons, even if he doesn't like it, even if he thinks it's hard to watch, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. the true answer of what he said. But if he was recommending it, like, he wasn't given any grace to have liked it for other reasons. It was that he had to like it because he likes pedophilia, which is crazy. Mm. So I think that was trash. Like, I think that running online to condemn someone is trash. Mm-hmm. And I think even with what's his dumb name, Jeezy's dumb verse mm-hmm. in this 80s song, I waited until the whole song was out, until I'd heard it, to say, yeah, I don't like it and I'm not going to support it. Mm-hmm. I just think that you should know the full story before you start posting about something online.
Right. And I get that it's difficult difficult to know when you know the full story. If we could just slow our roll, because if you don't have to be the first person to come out and speak out against something for it to like count, you know, you don't have to be first. But I think that there, you do get a lot of clout if you can look back and say, well, I called it. I said that he was bad news before or whatever.
Anyways, that was off topic.
The other thing, which I know is the one thing that you were irritated with, was people constantly posting their interactions.
Ah, yes. The interaction girlies. I mean, I say that, but it's also like men too, right? If I talk about this, it's going to sound like I'm very jealous of the people who are getting interactions.
I would like to go on record and state that I am not, because I have learned I can't function in AT's presence. I don't know if this comes later on in this list or whatever, but I had send off one time, mm-hmm. and I could not, was incapable of speech. I could barely look at them. You know, personally handed back my thing that I got signed, and I thought I was going to die. So no, I am not jealous. I wouldn't be able to handle it.
I am not jealous. I don't fault people their interactions. I think it's great when you get an interaction. I'm very happy for them. What I don't like is that they act like people are jealous of them and that they're upset about people being jealous of them. But you've come to the internet to brag. You camped for 3 days to get this barricade spot. Mm-hmm. You have situated yourself in a situation where you know that ATs is going to be, and you have pulled out your phone to record this interaction when you know that they're going to be doing it, like dancing like butterfly wings. Mm-hmm. Like, that's when you've got your camera out. That's when you're ready for your moment. Mm-hmm. You've made a sign to get their attention, or you're like screaming at them and being annoying to all the people around you, which is fine and whatever. And then you've come and you've posted it online and you said something dumb like, Mingy couldn't take his eyes off me. He loves me so much. Oh. Or Sangwa kept coming over to our section because he saw how cool and hype we were. And it's like, okay, well, you're being annoying. Yeah, like, that's the thing. You're mm-hmm. being annoying. There's not a person in my life who I would want to hang out with who acts like that. If you're constantly telling me how much someone loves you and how you're so special to them, mm-hmm. and, oh, I can't believe that Hong Joong did this for me. He is always checking on me and making sure I'm okay during the concert. It's like, no. That's weird behavior. That's weird. It's so weird. And I hate seeing those tweets online, and they get so much traction because mm-hmm. I guess other people love seeing this. I, again, proving that I don't belong on ATNE Twitter. Yeah. Like, these tweets get so much traction and they go everywhere, and I just cannot stand it. If there's a concert, I won't get on Twitter. Like, I don't watch people's concert videos. Mm-hmm. I don't watch their send-off videos. I don't care. I don't care how the members perceived someone else. I don't care. And I find the behavior of going online to talk about it so annoying.
It makes me, you know, because I've long said I do not watch people's fan calls when they post them. It makes me extremely uncomfortable.
I also don't watch people's fan calls.
And it's not, again, it's not jealousy. If it's jealousy, it'd be jealous for the ability to be able to speak in their presence, which is a thing I cannot do. But it's really not. It's not that I want the fan call. I have refused to allow you to put me into fan call raffles because I'm so scared of winning. So it's not that. It's that I don't care, first of all. Secondly, uh-huh. it feels very voyeuristic. Like, I'm let in mm-hmm. on this little thing that I'm not supposed to be there. I'm not supposed to be seeing this. And also, it makes me uncomfortable because it makes me concerned for these people, because I'm like, this thing, this interaction mm-hmm. that you're having right now is not real.
Right.
This man is getting paid to act like this towards you. This is part of his job. I'm not saying, and I know we've talked about this before, I'm not saying that ATs doesn't like their fans, that they don't like being able to speak with them and interact with them. That is absolutely not what I'm saying, because it's not true. They obviously do enjoy it. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that Hong Joong doesn't remember you. Mm-hmm. Hong Joong does not go home and think about you. Mm-hmm. San is not going back and dreaming of the ATNE that he saw off of stage left with the sign and the Sandoki ears. He's not. I'm sorry. It's just not what's happening. our relationship with them is not of that sort. And it makes me concerned for these people where I'm like, I don't know if this person can discern reality from fan fiction. I don't know if they really understand the true nature of their relationship with ATs as a fan and not as their friend or lover or whatever it is that you think you are. And that is why a lot of these fan interactions have been uncomfortable for me to watch, because I'm like, I don't know. Am I watching this through the eyes of a delusional person? I'm not really, honestly, not really sure.
Some of the things that people write on Twitter, I'm like, wow, the narrative that you have built in your head is so strong. You should be a fiction writer. Like, that is an incredible narrative that you have built up in your head. But I think about it in, like, any other context. Like, take away the K-pop of it all. If you knew someone who was constantly talking about what a special and precious flower they are and how everyone loves them, like, wouldn't you also find that annoying? Like, God, that's just annoying behavior. Even without the K-pop of it all, even without the interactions, just this going on online and being like, I am so special. I am so cool. I am the most beloved, the most beautiful, the most whatever in the whole world. I just find that behavior so intolerable. And perhaps it's because I am old. And I think it attracts people who do like mean girls. Like, I think that is why we see such mean girl behavior on ATEEZ Twitter, because there are a lot of people in K-pop, not all of them, but there is an emo to K-pop pipeline, right? People who were lonely, people who didn't have any friends, who weren't part of the special in crowd.
Right.
And they want to identify the most special and perfect person and saddle up next to them so that they too can be part of the cool crowd. And I feel like these people get their interactions and they use those interactions to make themselves popular on Twitter, to attract those types of people. And then you have these weird little delusional gangs that are just mean. Like, they're just mean to other people. And it is so frequent that a lot of these big interaction accounts are accounts that think they are the favorite fan of that artist. And what does that say about all the other people that bias that artist? They're not as good as them.
Right.
They can come out and be like, oh no, I love all of the other San-biased people too. Like, I think it's great when I meet other San-biased people. But you still think that you're the best and best San fan.
Yeah.
And that he knows you best and that he likes you best. So you might think it's great when you meet other San-biased people, but you still think that you're his favorite. So you obviously don't think that highly of the other San-biased people.
Right.
Which is my feeling on it.
Right. There's just so much delusion. There was a lot of chatter about people going to multiple stops for a while. One person tweeted, "Let me hold your hand while I tell you this. ATEEZ is not going to have sex with you if you go to multiple stops." And I was like, I understand. They're probably talking to the interaction girlies right now.
Right.
But as someone who went to multiple stops, that was never my expectation. I can tell you that right now.
That's so weird that you didn't think they would see you and just like fall off the stage and sleep with you in front of everyone.
You know, I really tried. When I got barricaded that one time, I really tried to, you know, charm them with my agape mouth and wide open eyes and just slack jaw, couldn't do anything. Yeah, I'm sure I was deeply charming. You know, and I feel like we talked about this just a smidge yesterday when you're like, K-pop fans have lost the plot. But I went to multiple stops, not because I wanted interactions, not because I wanted them to fall in love with me. What would I even do with a 20-year-old man right now? Please answer me that question. What am I supposed to do with him? Feed him? What do I do?
Look at how pretty he is,
except I can't function in his presence. So would I encase him in resin? I don't understand. I went because ATEEZ puts on the most impeccable performance possible. Just that's it. And to only have seen it once would be a tragedy. So I went to multiple stops. One, because I could afford to do that because I don't have children. Two, because I wanted to be able to see them multiple times and in different types of venues and different types of environments. And also because I'm an adult and I do what I want. That's why. That's why I went to multiple stops. And I feel like most people who did go to multiple stops did it for the show itself and yeah. not because they were trying to become Twitter famous.
You know who the interaction girlies are because they're the ones who always post their interactions, right? Yeah. Like that's
everyone that we are currently speaking to, you know who we're talking about. We don't have to tell you.
Right. You don't even have to really look for them. And I'm not talking about a person who posts like one or two mm-hmm. interaction that's maybe not even an interaction, like mm-hmm. just a fan cam, or they post like one interaction. I'm talking about the people who collect interactions.
Right.
There's such a difference, and it's hard because like some people don't take the time to see that difference. They're just like, oh, they went to three stops. I have a friend who had Alt VIP 3 times. They've posted, I think, 1 or 2 videos from that. Mm-hmm. And what I will say about Alt VIP is that Alt VIP is a good ticket. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a good seat. So maybe you got it for the interactions. Maybe you got it for the good seat. I don't know. What I have found interesting is that there are some people who were obsessed with going to Send Off. Mm. They only wanted to go to the concert if they could have Send Off. And to me, that's very different than a person who just wants a good seat for a show.
Right. I didn't want Send Off. I feel like I've made my point here, but I am going to just keep beating it into the ground. I was dreading Send Off because I was like, I knew how I was going to be. I knew how I was going to be. Also, I was so tired and dehydrated and it was very rough, but
I was also dreading Send Off the first time. Mm-hmm. Cassandra told me I was being a downer. She's like, I need you to stop being a downer. And I was like, well, I don't want to go.
Sorry, this is from the anxious girlies, the opposite of the interaction girlies. We're on the other end of the spectrum.
My anxiety is not that I mind ATs perceiving me. Like, I just don't, I don't like being around crowds. Mm. I don't like having to yell for attention. Mm. Like, I don't care. Like, if I was at Send Off and I had like a barricade spot and an ATs member came up and started talking to me, that would not make me anxious. Mm-hmm. I would not be anxious about ATs perceiving me and talking to me. What makes me anxious is people yelling for people's attention. Yeah. Like, I do not like that. And I would rather live in a hole for forever mm-hmm. than yell out, son, over here. Like, even the thought of yelling that out fills me with an existential dread that is right. hard to describe. So Send Off, I felt, would not be my vibe. I did not feel like I wanted to do it. And I kept telling Cassandra, like, I don't want to go. It's awkward. Don't make me do this. And she was like, you're being such a downer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I just don't want to do it. It was fine. And like, you know, you said I was able to say things to them when they approached me. I didn't yell at them from across the...
Right.
When they were at the other mm-hmm. side trying to sign for people, I was never going to like yell out for them to turn around or start talking to them. Mm-hmm. That's not me. But when they were in front of me and if they looked at me, I was able to speak.
Well, because we were on the second row and I was behind somebody yes. kind of tall. So mm-hmm. I don't think I was very visible. So when they were in front of us, I was obviously not speaking. So mm-hmm. I don't think I said anything. I don't even think I said thank you. Like, I don't know. I couldn't tell you anything that happened.
Blacked out.
Yeah, I was just...
in your mind.
The only proof I have is my little thing that I got signed by 3 out of 4 boys that I was aiming for. I knew I wasn't going to get OT8. I was like, I'm not even going to try. I think that speaks a lot about what the fandom thinks being a fan is, that mm-hmm. you go not because you love the performance and you love the music, but you go mm-hmm. because you want the attention. And that's very sad to me.
I want to talk about the Twitter discourse about post-concert depression, mm-hmm. because that's also like a very common discourse. After you see ATs, you just can't move on. You're stuck at the show, blah, blah, blah. This, which we will talk about later, I saw them 6 times. I saw them in so many different ways. Like, I did not have post-concert depression after this concert. And I do think that focusing on the show, being able to see the show in multiple ways, I think that is what made it so that I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I do think the Twitter discourse about, like, people seeing multiple shows. One, you should let people do whatever they want with their money. Mm-hmm. if I have the money to see multiple shows, I am going to do it. And that's just what it is. Mm-hmm. It is sad that not everyone can do it, but life is sad.
Yes, life is sad.
It's sad that not everyone can go to Hawaii. It's mm-hmm. sad, you know, all of these things that money allows people to do and that some people don't have it, like that is sad, but it is not different when it starts coming to concerts, because concerts aren't a public right. They are a fun thing that people can do with mm-hmm. their disposable income. That is what they're for. Concerts are a business. We'll talk more about the price of the concerts later, but mm-hmm. like the Twitter discourse about going to multiple shows, I think is missing the plot. I want to see them perform as many times as I want to, and I need to if I want to be able to see and understand the whole show. Mm-hmm. Some people can get it in one.
How?
Some people, me, can't.
No. So
I didn't even know what the set list was until the fourth show. And that's not because I wasn't there for the music.
Like, right. It's so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've had a little bit of like a letdown. Like I had that mm-hmm. big super high of mm-hmm. not only being at the concerts, but doing like the whole trip that we did on top of that.
Right.
So, and I had spent like my whole summer kind of preparing for that, because that was officially marking the end of my summer vacation
mm-hmm.
because I drove straight from the hotel in Duluth to work the next morning. So I didn't have any kind of downtime to, mm-hmm. and like even last weekend, my family was in town
mm-hmm.
and I was dealing with all of that. And so I haven't really had any downtime to process this big thing that was sort of like the whole pin. It was like for several months was like the thing that I was planning for and getting ready for is over
mm-hmm.
because I've gone right into the beginning of school. And then last time they were here, they were at State Farm and it was so much better, but we'll get there. I only had two shows, which was, it was mm-hmm. so nice just getting to go to two shows, which was mm-hmm. such a luxury for me because it was over my Thanksgiving break.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a little bit of post-concert depression with that, but then it was Thanksgiving and then I went like immediately, you know, called my friend Anna, was like, I've got to come see you because I need to get out of mm-hmm. town. I need to distract myself. And so mm-hmm. I went to go see her right after Thanksgiving. And so I kept myself busy, but I fully understand post-concert depression.
Yeah.
Fully get it. I've had moments of watching like people's fan cams from DC and City Field and Toronto and mm-hmm. just that feeling of, oh, I'm never going to be able to sit and watch Jungo sing everything again because I don't think it's mm-hmm. going to be on the next tour. I'm like, I've seen it. I've seen it for the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, most likely. I'm not going to get that everything into Woo Young's dance solo, into Silver Light, that overwhelming mm-hmm. like set list moment ever again. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is one of the reasons that I only pulled out my phone one single time, and that was to get myself an everything fan cam in Phoenix from Barricade. And I mm-hmm. did not touch my phone the rest of the time. And that's not for me to be like, oh, I'm so much better than you because I was living in the moment. But I was living mm-hmm. in the moment. And I was able to like really appreciate what I was seeing in front of me
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't distracted by trying to get mm-hmm. it on film so that I could watch it yeah. again later, or so I could post it somewhere.
I feel similarly, like it's not really depression, but I feel like this bittersweetness, mm-hmm. I guess, mm-hmm. about everything and the song.
Yeah.
Silver Light, getting to see those and seeing those shows, seeing that set list. Like, I'm not going to see that again. And that is bittersweet. But I did not come back from Duluth thinking, oh my God, I got to get tickets to another show. Part of that is I did get COVID, but mm-hmm. I wasn't actually that sick for most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I was sick during their DC show. But if I had wanted to get myself to Rosemont, I could have done it.
I thought about it, honestly. Friday, I was like, I could maybe do it. I could swing it. So I was doing some serious math. And honestly, the big thing that held me back from Rosemont was knowing that it's over this first weekend in between like our first mm-hmm. couple of days of school, and then our first full week of school is coming up. up.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to set myself up. AT's tour is temporary, you know, and my school success is really important. And I don't want to, like, start my year off poorly because I was at a concert. But I thought about it. I really did.
No, I didn't. I was like, you know, I feel fulfilled. Mm. I will save the rest of this thought for when we start talking about, is it worth it? Because I think that is part of the reason that I feel fulfilled.
So we've sort of touched on what our next point is. We're kind of getting into it. Our next point is about the performance itself. And I know we have so many feelings. I have so many feelings about the actual performance, my favorite parts, unexpected parts. I've already mentioned the Jongo into Wooyoung into Silverlight, just absolutely destroying me every single time.
Mm-hmm. Perfection.
Silverlight is right up there with Answer for me. They contend constantly for being my very favorite AT song. Not favorite AT song. Favorite song, period. Mm-hmm. I love Silverlight so much. It brings me just the most joy a song can bring a person. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It was written for me. I love that it was on the set list. I love what they did with it. I love how cinematic everything was. There's a whole story that is being told, and it's not an overbearing story. It doesn't dictate what the show is, but it gave the show some structure that I really liked, and I like how all the different segments kind of have their own personality. So if that was going to be, like, that is my actual favorite part, but I will say that my unexpected favorite was Matt's.
Oh, Matt's was so fun.
It's not my favorite song. I don't dislike it by any measure. I really do like it. I enjoy it. Never skip it when it comes on. Always have a good time. But it's not one that I, like, reach for. I'm never like, oh, man, I really just want to listen to Matt's right now. But the way that they did it, the way that the performance works, and the way that they used the VCR, and just the whole thing was so much fun. It was always after Phoenix, which was my first show, that was, like, the part that I was really looking forward to, was getting to see Matt's again.
I agree. I thought Matt's was super fun. At Phoenix, I think I recorded all of Matt's, except for when they go up to the extended stage, because we were main stage Barricade at Phoenix. So anything on the extended stage, I just turned around and watched their behinds. I didn't record any of that. But it was really fun and unexpected. I know that a lot of people talked about, they didn't really feel like there was a strong opening to the concert.
I haven't seen that discourse. That's interesting.
Well, because AT's kind of just comes from the smoke from behind. Mm-hmm. They don't come out to, like, a song, really. Mm-hmm. And who really opens the show is BB Trippin. Like, they are the first out. They do the first number. They do, like, a little dance number. Mm-hmm. But that is one of the things that I loved most about this concert, the way that they incorporated dance numbers into the, I guess, like, blank spaces, the parts between songs. BB Trippin there at the opening, but also after Yoonho's, I think, solo. See, I saw this concert 6 times and I do not remember.
I believe it is after Yoonho, because they do something and then San comes out for, I think it's This World.
Yes, I think so too. This a world very short into, rendition of This World.
Into Wake Up? Is that what it is?
I think so.
Who knows? Not us, clearly. We only saw it multiple times.
Well, that is my favorite part of this show. BB Trippin's dance break to San coming out. Mm-hmm. All of their dancing together. I think that is so good. Mm-hmm. Like, the dance that BB Trippin and San do is phenomenal, in my opinion.
It is very, very good.
Into This World, which is for me. That is my song. It is the first song that Jungho ever sang to me. Mm. It's This World. Sang to me, personally, because I'm the most special flower, actually. He sang it to me on a fan call. So that song has always been very special to me. I loved that dance break. I love This World. And I think that Wake Up is one of their most impressive songs done on stage, and it's not because of the sexy dance, which is fine. I'm not really a sexy dance person. Like, I could honestly do without the sexy dances. But, you know, when they work, they work.
I think it all depends on how you interpret them, but the cameraman gives us a very strong and literal interpretation that's like,
yes,
you know, the how many crotch shots are we going to get drinking game, I don't recommend because you will die in like the first 15 minutes.
Which, you know, is a choice, and it some people like it. I know that some people on Instagram were complaining about it and then getting canceled, because I do think you don't need to complain about these things on Instagram.
No.
The crotch shots did not detract from the concert for me.
No.
I only say all of this because I want to be clear that the reason I love Wake Me Up is the vocal performance.
Mm-hmm.
It is so impressive. All of it, but also what Dongho does at the end is just, it blows me away.
He is absolutely losing his mind, and I feel like nobody pays attention because of what is happening on stage.
Well, what the camera is forcing us to focus on, right?
Yeah.
Like, if the camera did a real close-up of him singing that insane note in Wake Up, it's just so incredible, the note that he sings. And so that whole section is just really perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it is aided, and I think this is also true for you, it is aided by that dance break. Those dance breaks are adding so much. A lot of talk has been about Sanghwa's dance break, which is also really good because Sanghwa is a fantastic actor when it comes to that sort of emoting during a performance. So he really kills it every time. But all of the dance breaks are good.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're adding a lot to the storytelling. And kind of like you said, I like that the storytelling is, like, we were with someone who asked us, what is the story of this concert? And it's like, well, it's more of a feeling.
Yeah.
It's more of a feeling than a story. Like, I'm sure if I sat down, I could come up with a literal story, but that's not really what it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's what they're trying to create. And I think this is true for a lot of ATEEZ's storytelling. They are trying to create a feeling that leads you somewhere. And because feelings are unique, where it leads you is also unique.
Right.
Back to the post-concert depression thing. I guess maybe I can talk about this in every section. After seeing so many shows, what I felt more than anything was inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I felt inspired to create something.
Right.
I was ready to go home and start writing. And with the exception of my short COVID convalescence, that has been true. Like, I was sick for a couple of days, and then I started writing, journaling, reading, doing art that I had been putting off. And I credit ATEEZ to that. Their story, all of the dance breaks, the way it all worked together, I left that concert feeling inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, I want to do something cool like that too.
Slightly tangential to what you were talking about. Well, you were talking about Sanghwa earlier, about people have been talking about his dance performance, but more specifically, some fans of other groups have been coming for Sanghwa because of his performance and talking about how over the top it is and how cringe it is. And you know how I feel about people saying that ATEEZ is cringe.
Mm-hmm.
That's stupid.
I feel like those people are not in touch with their emotions and are scared to feel things. That's
right.
That's how I feel.
I agree with that. And a lot of people, I think, very rightly pointed out, you are used to getting just bare minimum from performances. Because I am not going to name any names, but there are groups where their vibe is not about passion. Their vibe is about perfection. And I'm not saying that that is wrong or bad. If that is what you want, if that is what makes you happy, great. That's great for you. But I'm a theater kid.
Mm-hmm.
I love the acting that they do. The big facial expressions are what you need if you are in a big venue. You have to play to those back seats. And I know that they're being filmed and they have the big screens, but that doesn't change the fact that you are performing not just for your interaction girlies along Barricade, but you're performing for every people in the way back of that very top tier. You're performing for everybody, and you have to make your expressions and your gestures big. This is coming from someone who has a master's degree in theater that I'm not currently using except to complain on a podcast. So
money well spent.
I know, right? Weirdly, it did make me a better writer being in theater, and probably assists with my teaching in some way. But in the fact that they know that people tell them, that people say things about how they overdance or overact or whatever, mm-hmm. but they still do it, tells me they do not care about your stupid opinion. So
as they shouldn't.
And what was so wild to me, this is a separate complaint. This person who was talking about how cringe ATs is, mm-hmm. was a fan of another group that I believe had also received similar criticisms back when they were more active. A lot of their members are in military right now, I believe. Mm-hmm. That plus, this is just a general criticism of mine of A2E Twitter. The way that people will find these accounts with 30 followers that would never have been showing up on A2E Twitter timelines, mm-hmm. except for the fact that these A2Es find these accounts and they want to quote them, give them all of this reach to spread their nonsense, and now it becomes a whole thing, is so frustrating to me. To me, it is one thing to go after a big account that, you know, a lot of people follow and gets a lot of reach all the time. It is another to target this person with like fewer than 100 followers. They could have said their stupid thing, and that stupid thing could have disappeared into the void and nobody would ever know. But you chose to amplify that. So now all of these people who otherwise would not have known this rando thinks that ATs are bad performers, now you've put all of that on their radar, and we could have lived in peace, but now we've got to deal with this knowledge that there's yet another idiot out there.
I think part of the conversation about their facial expressions, if you take something in isolation outside of the performance, like, yeah, it might look weird, but the way the story unfolds, all of their acting makes perfect sense.
Right.
And doesn't feel over the top in the context of the performance. You have to remember that ATs' performances are over the top. We've got fireworks, we've got smoke, we've got
fire extinguishers,
like, we've got it all, right? The whole thing is over the top. So if you put a tiny little baby facial expression when you have all this other stuff going on, it's going to get lost. They have to be over the top to fit what's happening. It's not over the top in the context of where they are performing, what else is going on in the show, what was before and after. Everything is building on each other. We know that if you take something out of context, you can change it. So maybe Sanghwa's face looks over the top out of context, but in the context of that show, he's nailed it.
Yeah. Sure, if you take a one single screenshot of one moment in one performance and say, oh, imagine seeing this outside your bedroom window at night. Like, could we not be idiots for like 3 seconds? I have found that a little frustrating, but also kind of telling that people don't really have an appreciation for the performance itself, and that they're willing to grasp at just actual straws in order to find something to bring ATs down, because they don't really have much else to go with.
No. Being different from others is not the insult that people think it is.
Right. So. You know, being really good at their jobs is not the insult that people seem to think it is.
Right.
Like, they're performers. They're performing. What do you want them to do? Just stand there? There are other groups for that.
Obviously, ATs is full of very handsome men. That is true. And some people, not anyone that I know or associate with, because it's gross, but some people are into K-pop because it has pretty people that they can look at and cast their fantasies on. ATs does not prioritize being pretty during their concerts. So if you like seeing pretty men, beautiful people, and having fantasies about them, yeah, I can see why an AT show doesn't work for you. But that's a you problem. That's not an AT's problem. You've lost the plot.
Right.
Like, if you want to look at a pretty person, just turn on a K-drama and be done with it.
Or just look at a picture. There are all sorts of pictures.
A magazine, buy a magazine. There are plenty of pretty people in the world.
Like, if you don't want to watch a person express human emotions, well, it's a skill issue. Do you have anything more about the performance?
I don't think so. I said that I loved it, right?
Honestly, we struggled to get to some of those shows. Our fourth point here is Forces of God.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been through it. Specifically, like, we in Phoenix, we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. I guess we can kind of get into sort of some storytelling of here's what our concert experience was like.
Yeah.
So I know you started in LA, but I think LA, it sounds like LA was great for you.
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. LA was great in that the shows were pretty easy. We'll get into this more with our last point of is it worth it. I had mm-hmm. ultimate VIP mm-hmm. at one of the LA shows, and I had a suite at one of the LA shows. Both very VIP experiences. Mm-hmm. Both great. But we were on this family vacation, so I was pretty tired, pretty moody. But no big horrible things happened in LA.
So we met up in Phoenix, got there at the same, almost the same time, and our gates were like right next to each other. So that was just
great.
So simple. And it, I think, gave me a false expectation for how well the rest of the trip would work, just fall into place.
I have to say, we landed in Phoenix. I got off of the airplane. It was so hot.
In the jetway, I was like, I think I'm going to die.
I know.
I know that I've used this phrase with you multiple times, that it is the most accurate phrase. It was like being in Satan's hairdryer. It was like standing directly in the funnel with the heat. It was so,
because it was so windy.
Hot. Yes, it was very windy, and it was just hot wind.
Hot wind. Like, you think the wind would make you feel better when it's doesn't. That hot. And I would say no.
No, it doesn't help. It's like, here's more heat.
I had flown from California to Las Vegas, mm-hmm. from Las Vegas to Phoenix. So my Las Vegas to Phoenix flight was only about 30 minutes. Mm. They did not provide us with a beverage service, because basically we got up in the air, we were there for 10 minutes, and then we started our descent
right.
to land. So I was so thirsty. Mm-hmm. I at some point, I think I may have blacked out, because I remember we like sat down and I was like, I need to get a drink. I like went to try to get the drink, and the vending machine wouldn't work. And I was like, well, I'm going to die here. I won't get to see the third show. This is all for naught. And so I do remember very specifically, like, being in front of that rental car place, like standing there while y'all were sitting, and thinking, oh, I don't know if I can do this.
I thought I was ready. I was like, I know I just got to stay hydrated. I'm going to get my bottle of water, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have that bottle of water, and that is going to be okay. And I just need to make sure I keep drinking. Mm-hmm. I could not drink enough water to satisfy Phoenix.
It was 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. at night.
Fully dark.
So the sun was down. Mm-hmm. It was dark. It was 110 degrees outside. That's mm-hmm. 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. It was so hot. We get the notification, because I've got like a lot of friends on Instagram, so we get a notification from one of my friends that people have started camping. Mm-hmm. It is 110 degrees and people are camping, and I was like, well, they want it more than I.
Yeah. Couldn't be me.
So at 8 o'clock, we knew, I think there was 50 people mm-hmm. in the line at 8 o'clock, which is a lot of people. We did not join the line. Woke up as early as we could. I think it was like 6.
Rolled out of bed. We had hats, we had fans, we had like all our cooling gear.
Truly incredible. The line was in front of our hotel.
Mm-hmm. It had stretched all around 3 sides of the block. So there were hundreds of people already there. It was so hot. It wasn't mm-hmm. bad at first. Like, we were right across the street from our hotel, and we had like that yeah. wall behind us.
Mm-hmm. The sun wasn't all the way
up. And it wasn't, it was hot.
I think it was 101. Yeah. Like, I think that's what it started at 101 in the morning.
But we were in the shade of that little wall, mm-hmm. and
we had our fans.
I could not maintain my liquids. Like, it was just impossible.
Well, at some point, the security guard started coming by and talking to us, mm-hmm. and he was like, we are going to honor this line. Yeah. We are going to move you on the property. We're going to move you as a line. Don't worry, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So he was really cool, really organized. And then I want to say, maybe around 8, they split the line. So we'd been out for like an hour and a half.
Way earlier than they were going to actually check us in. But I do think it was mm-hmm. more like 9, though.
Okay. So around 9, they split the line. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you need to take all your stuff back to your hotel because they're going to do security. So you can't take chairs. You can't take umbrellas. We dumped all our stuff back in the hotel room, which wasn't a problem because our hotel room was super close. But we had to stand out there without like our fans, without like our water bottles for probably an hour before they moved us onto that property.
Right.
Eventually, I went back in and got the umbrella because I was like, I can't do it anymore. I've got to have the umbrella. I'll just throw it away.
Yeah. So they split us into our two lines, into Sector and H&E. It was very funny because there was a group of people. It wasn't even like a large group, but there was a group of people standing at whatever that grocery store is that was across the street. They were obviously H&E's because you can recognize an H&E on a concert day. And security was the one who was like splitting us up and putting it, getting us in order. And it was very clear that they were going to honor the fan main line, even though they said that they weren't.
Right.
And people were really upset at this group of people that it was obvious that once they started moving us across the street onto the property of the Footprint Center, they were going to try to get into the line and cut. Right. And I don't, what was it? Somebody, I know that we were cheering for security because they said like, no, you're not going to, they had said, we're not going to let them do that. We're not going to let them cut in line. They're going to have to go to the back of the line.
Well, and they had a nice megaphone and they were saying it.
Mm-hmm. When they brought us across like in group, because we had to cross like a street to get over there. Mm-hmm. And when we came across, everybody's like, okay, remember who's next to you. Everybody hold hands. Everybody hold on to the person next to you. So we had like this lifeline of H&E's making sure nobody could jump in. It was very fun. But then, like, we had stood out there for a long time in the sun. We were very hot and tired. But what I appreciated about the Footprint staff is that they got us onto the property and they snaked the line as much as they could in the shade of the building so that we were not... Yes. If it was at all possible, they tried to get us in out of the sun.
They also brought out several water coolers and provided cups and were telling people, go get water, free water, free. I like... Put that in capital letters.
This is a setup for later.
Flashing lights.
And they put check-in inside. So they had, once they started moving people inside, they had like another, you know, shorter line inside.
And they were snaking that too eventually. Right. They didn't at first, but eventually they started snaking it inside. Yeah,
so they could get more people in because people were passing out. I think it was mostly just people in sector that were passing out and would continue to pass out later because they couldn't get into the building. And because they didn't get wristbands, so they couldn't go home or couldn't go back to their hotel rooms or whatever. The way the H&E check-in was so smooth, and I, like, it was rough. Like, I was okay until we got into the, and we weren't quite in the shade yet, because we were about 150 people back in H&E. I think we were 155 and 156.
And I think there were 500 people in H&E, so we were pretty high.
We did pretty good. But anyway, we weren't quite close enough to be fully in the shade, so I'm sitting out there. And this was where I really started to shut down. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. My watch was like telling me your heart rate is very elevated. You need to calm down. I'm like, I just don't know if I can do it. I'm like, I'm freaking out.
I can't calm down. I'm just sitting here.
I know. There's nothing less I could do except to die. So what do you want? But it was very clear. I don't think we need a play-by-play of like everything that happened at Footprint Center, but it was really, really clear. They were trying to get us out of the sun. They wanted to make sure everybody was going to be okay. They didn't want people passing out. They made smart decisions. They had several people checking people in. They had the check-in inside in the air conditioning in their very big lobby.
And when we came back, they put us inside immediately. We did not stand outside in a line. We were able to, like, they told us a time to come back. We came back at that time and they immediately put us inside. They lined us up in number order. They had signs for like which numbers. So organized. And when we got in there, they offered everyone a popsicle.
Yeah. It was so great. It was so nice. And like Sector too, they also had Sector come in at that time and line up. They did not have people outside for longer than they needed to be. Like, it was really clear they wanted to get people inside. They wanted everything to run smoothly. There were like a ton of people kind of managing the lines.
I really appreciated that about Footprint Center. I really appreciate that about Phoenix. That was our first act of
Big
God.
Big shout out.
Hot.
Yeah, the heat
is an act of God.
Then we took off to Dallas. famously your hometown.
On the plane, we had a medical emergency immediately. Is that
I forgot about Robert. I hope Robert's okay.
I hope he's okay, too. We were flying into Dallas. Couldn't have been 5 minutes after this plane takes off. They get on and they're like,
maybe 10.
They're like, do we have any doctors or nurses? Can you please come to the front? We have a situation.
I know, of course. I'm sitting up like, what's going on?
Well, this situation lasted the entire flight. So mm-hmm. they didn't do any beverage service.
They didn't turn the lights off either. They had the lights on.
Didn't turn the lights off, which was fine. Like, obviously, I would rather have Robert be okay.
Yeah.
But it was just like a weird vibe for a flight. This mm-hmm. is another flight where I had stupidly not filled up my water bottle because I was like, oh, I'll just get a cup of water.
Yeah.
It just never came. So I was very dehydrated by the mm-hmm. time we got to Dallas. But other than that, we didn't really have any issues getting into Dallas, I don't think.
We got picked up, went home, got some pizza, mm-hmm. started feeling better about life in general. So mm-hmm. this was the Friday.
Pizza will do that.
Yeah, this was the Friday night before. So the next concert was at the Globe Life Stadium in Arlington, Texas. So we had 2 days. We were until then.
And then Saturday we worked at a cup sleeve.
The most packed cup sleeve you could possibly imagine. There was nowhere for anybody to sit. It was very confusing, but we were there.
It was very overwhelming, mm-hmm. I'm sure, for both Bobby and Rachel who were there helping me. We did the best we could. If you were there, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
If you were nice to us.
Which was a really great way to spend a Saturday after traveling.
It was a lot. It was tiring. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of it, we all kind of were like, "Ooh, boy."
Yeah. Well, we went home that night, had some barbecue.
Yes.
Next day was very chill because you and I had bowl seats.
Yes.
And someone had offered us sector mm-hmm. VIP. And so we had both thought briefly, well, we could just go to soundcheck.
Yeah.
Since it was a stadium, it was seated VIP. So we wouldn't have had to like line up and do the bracelet thing and all that. We could have just mm-hmm. gone right in. But I think both of us were like, but also what if we didn't? But also what if we just chilled for a little while?
Yeah, there is something so enjoyable about arriving to a concert just mm-hmm. right before the concert's going to start mm-hmm. and just sitting in your seat and then just having a nice time.
Right.
Like, that is an underrated experience.
Well, here's the thing about Globe Life, though. The lines to get in mm-hmm. were absurd. They were so long.
Insane.
Like, so long. And then as we are, there's like this huge long line like wrapping around the corner up there mm-hmm. at like the front of the stadium. And I see that there's like this really short line to get in. And I'm like... Why are we not using the short line? So I just went and got in the short line. I don't know. I mean, maybe I cut in front of 800 people. Maybe I didn't. I'm not really sure. But
the problem was that no one from Globe Life was out there policing the lines. They were really up at the front and they were like, oh, you can come over into this line. But it was like, sir, you see that there's like 600 people behind them, right?
So
you need to like start getting some of those people out of these lines.
It was, we were cutting it very close at this point. I think it was definitely after 7, probably after like 7:10. So we've got like 15-20 minutes till the con. No, it's less than that for sure. Because we get in, we get directed down into this pitch black hallway.
Yeah.
Like we go down these stairs. Like I'm showing everybody because I had the ticket. So I'm showing them the ticket. Like these are our tickets. And they're like, okay, go down the stairs into the black abyss. So we go down the stairs into pitch darkness and there's like this curtain set up. And I show the woman our ticket. I'm like, and she's like, oh, you're going to go down onto the floor. So I'm like, okay. So we go down onto the floor and we're wandering around the floor and it's like 7:25, 7:26. And we're like, where are the stairs to get back up? We're just wandering around on the floor. And finally I go find an usher and I'm like, sir, where are we supposed to be? He's like, you need to go back the way that you came. I'm very stressed at this point. They're going to start the show. I'm standing down here. I want to sit. So we go booking it back up the stairs. I very nearly lose my little baby Jong Bear. His keychain broke and a very kind man flagged me down and gave him back to me. Thank you, very kind man. You are a lifesaver. We finally get back up. Somehow we go up the stairs and we're not in the dark hallway abyss. We're in a different hallway with lights.
It's confusing.
And I'm like, I feel like I just went through the magic wardrobe in Narnia. I don't understand what just happened. And we're in the right place now. We left for Duluth the next morning.
The next morning and Cassandra's with us. So we all get to the airport.
We get on the plane. And this is where it all goes downhill.
It's so clear that Atlanta didn't want us.
Atlanta didn't want us. And I live here. And Atlanta was like, I don't need you right now. Please leave.
I have never in my life been on a plane that was rerouted to a different airport until that day.
So we flew Southwest. And so we're on our Southwest flight. And I look over at the map because I'm like, I can feel that we're turning. It feels like we should have been somewhere ages ago.
The map has just been like a circle.
So the pilot comes on and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, there's a little bit of weather in Atlanta, so we're not allowed to land. I think we've got enough fuel. And we're all like, what do you mean you think? What are you doing?
Meanwhile, I'm texting with our friend Rachel, who's flying on Delta, and she's like, oh yeah, I just landed in Atlanta. And I was like, oh, well, was there weather?
No, but she's like, there is no weather. There's like slightly raining. So they're like, yeah, we definitely can't land. And then later on, he comes on. It wasn't even that long after. He's like, yeah, we're going to go to Birmingham.
We don't have enough fuel.
So we got to go to Birmingham and refuel. When we get to Birmingham, we cannot deplane. We have to just sit there in the plane while they put more fuel on. And people are, of course, getting up to go use the restroom in droves.
We've now been on this plane for forever.
And then finally we get into Atlanta and the ground's not even wet.
Weather bad enough to reroute the plane. That's like, I've landed in bad weather before. I've never been rerouted.
It was all very confusing.
Is this called Act of God or have we transitioned to Duluth?
Forces of God and Duluth are hand in hand. So we're just transitioning right now into our next point, which is Duluth.
We were supposed to land at like 2. It was like 5.
Way off schedule. So I'm like exhausted. Don't know what's going on. So then the next day, we made it up to Duluth. Get to the hotel. Hotel is lovely.
Hotel is great.
We go out to eat. We get some soup. We're real chill because this night we have bowl seats.
Yeah.
Like we don't have to do anything. And we are literally right next door to the venue. So we stayed at the hotel that was like right there.
Couldn't be closer.
We just kind of casually walk on out there at some point. And it's a mess though. And we had already heard horror stories about how VIP had gone that morning. But what I noticed, like we do the 18E zone, which was outside, and we go get in line and we see that they on the side that we ended up entering after they had done for the VIP the next day, they had just opened it up to everybody. So we went and got in this really short line and we were able to get in pretty quickly.
No one else was. We only lucked out because we were over by 18E zone so we could see that they had opened this door.
Right.
And we were able to get in the super short line. Because the lines were like super long.
The security people were being very thorough. One thing that you'll notice if you go to Gas South Arena, and you shouldn't, but if you go to Gas South, they seem to be staffed entirely by like retirees.
Yeah.
But they were all tired. They all did not care. They were all taking their time.
They all seemed to resent the fact that they had to work a K-pop concert.
Yeah. Like, nobody seemed to be particularly happy to be there.
Which I think plays into, we're going to get into more horror stories of Duluth, but I think that is part of it.
So we go to the first show, and if you listen to our Live from Duluth episode that we posted a couple weeks ago, like, it was right after this, it was a great show for us. We had great so seats. Good. It was so fun. That was the night that Jungkook rapped in butterfly wings for Mingi and Hongjoong and made them do his vocals. It was very, very fun. It was so great.
Such a good show.
The girl that was next to me on the other side of me was from somewhere Eastern European and was so excited and having the best time. And her energy was just really fun. So night one is great. We walk casually. It's a 3-minute walk from the venue back to our hotel room. We're in high spirits, feeling good.
But there were warning signs.
There were warning signs for sure.
One of the things that happened, and we talked about it a little bit in our Live from Duluth, but we didn't really have all of the information, so I am going to touch on it here. That first night, someone in the crowd had multiple seizures.
Right.
And we could see it from our seats. We were in a position where we were very close to where that happened. And I know that that's what it was because a group of people around the person having seizures had lit their iPhones, mm-hmm. their light sticks, whatever, to like shine a flashlight on this person so that security could see them. So we saw all the lights. We knew someone had passed out. We knew someone was on the ground. We knew they were trying to get security's attention. That's what we could see from mm-hmm. our seats. And this was ongoing for 2+ songs, all of Youth, all of everything. But it turned out that they, like, this person was having seizures and they could not get a medic. Like, the AT&Ts mm-hmm. were trying to get a medic and they could not get one. They kept talking to security, who didn't have radios. Security couldn't radio for a medic. And then they would just kind of, like, the security would just, like, walk away. Yeah. Or, like, be like, oh, I don't know what to do about it. And it's like, well, you got to do something.
It took a long time for somebody to show up.
It took 12 minutes for them to get that person help after they started having seizures. And that is too long.
That is important to note because I am a teacher. We just had our beginning of school and we always have our training for how to do an EpiPen. What do you do if a child has a seizure? And the nurse very specifically said, you need to be tracking the time. Please try to pay attention to when it starts, because that's important. She's like, that's the first thing the EMT is going to ask, is how long has it been happening? Because if it's going on for like a certain amount of time, that gives you an idea of how serious it was. Mm-hmm. That this was happening for this long and mm-hmm. that security didn't seem to know what they were supposed to do about it. That I saw somebody talk to the security guy that was over by the extended stage. He didn't do anything. He didn't seem to have any like means of doing anything. And then it was mm-hmm. a very long time before we saw people. Well, like you said, 12 minutes before we saw people come in from the side mm-hmm. to access mm-hmm. the floor and do something about it. And it was so crazy. But we didn't know at the time, like maybe somebody just passed out. Maybe somebody was just feeling dizzy. It was really hard to know like what was happening.
All of the stuff that I'm sharing now is mm-hmm. stuff that I have subsequently found out through social media. I had friends who were on the floor that night too. One of my friends, her daughter got heat exhaustion, mm-hmm. which we'll go into more when we start talking about how, I can see how this happened based on our own experience on day two. But we also had heard that when the person had seizures, they started passing around a Gatorade bottle with like a squeeze top. Mm-hmm. And they're like, squeeze this in your mouths so that you don't pass out. When I said that those people seemed to resent the fact that they were at a K-pop concert, mm-hmm. like, I don't think that they believed that the people who were attending this concert were humans who deserved human dignity and respect. I think it was what I would consider, you know, when you hear those horror stories about animals being treated in a pound, mm-hmm. that's what I would compare it to. Like, they did not believe that they were dealing with people. Mm-hmm. They didn't provide any water for the people on the floor. They obviously didn't allow them to bring water in, because then they wouldn't make money off of selling water. Oh, and we didn't mention this, but in the Phoenix show, they mm-hmm. were passing water back on the floor. While we were in the show, there was a security guard directly in front of us, and he was passing water to us all night and like asking us to pass it back. Mm-hmm. That was through the entire show. Mm-hmm. They made sure people on the floor had water.
And he was like, listen, if you feel faint, if you feel dizzy, just wave at me. We're going to get you some water. We'll get you taken care of. And he was on top of it for that whole section that he was sort of in charge of. And he was like paying attention that whole night and knew exactly what to do.
Someone came and told him. So I like heard them talking about it. He was like, this is how many people have passed out today. Mm-hmm. We don't want that to happen anymore. And the guy was like, oh man, that's so sad. Okay. And he mm-hmm. was like, all right, this is my job. And he felt his job more than anything was making sure that water was in that floor.
Nobody in that section was passing out on his watch, and nobody passed out on his watch. He did it.
So anyways, they were not passing out water on the floor. They did not show any care. Apparently a lot more people passed out on the floor. We saw 2 people pass out on the floor the night we were there, second night. Mm. But they say that a lot of people passed out that first night, which I can see. So let's get into our second day. I know exactly why they passed out.
Thank you for joining us today for part 1 of our tour postmortem. We will be back next week with the rest of our conversation about the tour. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on Instagram and X at HolochatPodcast, or you can read more from our blog on teeny.com. Until next time, be the light.